All right, hello everyone. I'll just get this started by thanking the Toronto Public Library and the Beguiling, the presenters of TCAP. Without them, this all would not happen. Also thanks to Seneca College, our program sponsor. Of course, turn off the cell phones. We don't want any buzzing or beeping or that kind of thing going on while our panelists talk. So I'll let Ryan start us off and introduce our guests today.
Cool. Thank you, guys. Thanks, everybody, for coming. My name is Ryan Sands. I am a zine maker, and I run a publishing house called Youth in Decline. We do a monograph series with books by different artists, and later this year we're putting out a few collections by Mickey Zakili and Nick Samita. I want to introduce you guys to the Michael and Friends panel. So this is Michael. I'm going to introduce you last, and I'm going to try to embarrass you a little bit. This is Patrick Kyle. He's the drummer of Creep Highway. He also is an extremely talented and prolific cartoonist. He's author of the series Black Mass and Distance Mover. He did the cover for the latest Latvian anthology, Shu, number 17. And he's debuting like 15 books and TCAP this year, including Lemon, Charcoal, and Oil, Paint Stick Drawings, Basing from Museum Press, and New Comics 3. So he'll probably have something like finished by the end of this panel. Next, Patrick is someone we all know and love, Canada's hometown hero. Annie Koyama. Annie is sweetest and most generous person I know, but also she's one of the most interesting publishers in the new indie scene. I think we met here first 4 years ago. The same day I met Michael, I also met Annie. It was a really important day for me. And I've been sort of circling in her orbit of generosity and badassery, like, ever since then. So in about 7 years since she's been publishing as a publisher, she's put out over 60 titles. And the Koyama Press, I really like it. It's known for unique taste and ethical practices, and they're the standout in our scene and sort of the bar we all aspire to. They have a really big suite of new books coming out, including your book, which we're going to talk about, and then also Spy Honeymoon by Jesse Jacobs, Sue Kim's Cat Person, and 100 Crushes by Alicia Lim, and other titles that I'm forgetting. But yeah, welcome.
And Patrick's Distance Mover in the Fall.
And Patrick's Distance. Oh, cool. Is that exclusive? Can we have exclusive
yeah.
news? Distance Mover in the Fall. And next to Annie is another friend of ours, is Jillian Swanky. So Jillian is an award-winning illustrator, educator at SDA in New York. Jillian has a peerless style, and she's author of perhaps my favorite webcomic, Super Mutant Magic Academy. She's also the first person who slept on my brand new couch. And she's also the co-author with her sister, cousin, Mariko, of Skim, which I'm sure a lot of people have read, and debuting TCAP this year is their new book, This One Summer. And I wrote a story about teen friendship, parenting, and Muskoka.
That's about it.
Yeah. And, so the guest of honor is Michael. Spotlight guest of honor is Michael. This is weird because, like, we're friends, and then I know the answer to a lot of the questions I'm going to ask and stuff, but I'm going to do this anyway, so bear with me. He's, to me, one of my generation's most important and interesting cartoonists. Seth referred to him on the back of the new book as today's once-in-a-generation top-of-the-heap great cartoonists. At TCAF, they're debuting Body Beneath from Koyama Press. Tried to do it as a slideshow, and it showed only on my screen, so frame, but here's the cover, which collects Loons 2, 3, 4, and 5, as well as a bunch of new books, a mini called Sincerely Abby Loafer, a sketch book called Loons 7, new editions of Flu Drawings, and new hits. Yeah. You're also the author of Ant Calling and Drawing Quarterly, the ongoing webcomic Angelica Sticks. And then outside of all that, you know, because that's not that much, keep busy, Mike also is a props and effects artist on a show called Adventure Time. He's my favorite working cartoonist, sometime collaborator and a groomsman in my wedding. So if you can welcome Michael DeForge. Okay, cool. So I have some questions for Michael, and then Michael didn't want it to just be like an hour of us talking straight, so we brought everyone else. So I have some general, a lot of collaborators and friends. And so I brought, I have some questions and topics that relate to kind of all the work that you guys are doing. So hopefully we can just ask Michael some questions, I'll ask you guys some questions, and then we'll just all bully him and then around. So before I start, I want to tell two quick stories that I was thinking about Michael. One story is about the first time we ever worked together was on a zine called Prison for Bitches, which is a Lady Gaga fanzine. So
that's a like she pulled.
I was nice. My mom has a copy, and it's like you always. I never refer to it without the like subtitle.
Right.
A Lady Gaga fanzine. Sure. Sounds problematic. So we were working on this book. We were emailing back and forth when the telephone video came out, and we were like, someone should do a Lady Gaga fanzine. And weirdly, at that time, if you can imagine, there wasn't already a fanzine about a person or a property or TV show. So we decided to do that zine. So we put it all together in like 5 weeks, and all these people decided to be part of it. It was really shocking and cool, but we like didn't have it together before TCA. So I remember I sent Michael an email as I was flying in the Tuesday before, and I said, here's what's left to do. I'm doing the layout for this article, and I'm going to throw a couple other things, but all I need is 12 spot illustrations, the interior, and the back cover, and also the table of contents. And then I sent that email from the airport in San Francisco. I flew here, and when I landed, I opened my email, and they were all in my inbox, and they were amazing. Another story, sort of on the same tip, is about when you were traveling recently, you lost your Wacom. Like pen somewhere?
Yeah.
And so you were trapped, were you on a train or a bus?
A train.
Trapped on a train and then started making a comic with the trackpad and the pixels.
Sure.
Compelled.
Right. I was just bored too. Not a lot to do on the road.
I thought it was very telling. I was not surprised. Sure. So I guess I want to start with, I'll stop talking finally. But I wanted to talk about Blues. You're debuting the A Body Beneath, which collects the two, three, four, and five. As you guys all heard, like you're doing so much work all the time. So I wondered, can you talk about Lose as a series, and do you think of it differently from the rest of your work?
Yeah, I do. I think because it was one of the first things I did. Like I'd done a lot of minis and short things before, but the first issue was like the longest. I guess I don't do a lot of very long narratives, so the first issue was the longest thing I'd done before then. Or up to them, and it's just become a way of like dividing my year, so it sort of punctuates my year in a weird way. And a lot of the other projects, like I'll treat as seriously and put as much of myself into, but I feel like each issue of Lose ends up like experiments I'd done earlier in the year end up working their way into that issue, and it's like very much a reaction to everything I've been working that year because it's the only one that I work on. Or it might change right now, but before then, like, everything else I'd serialize in small bursts, and Lose, I just go in for, like, a few months of just taking over my life. But yeah, it's changing maybe now, because I'm doing an experiment where I serialize one of those stories and Lose to see if changing the process is good or bad, I guess.
Do you write those the same way? Like, I know you've said a few times, like for Ant Colony and for the other ones, like around the time you did the story in Thickness, you changed over from like pre-planning everything to doing it page by page.
Mm-hmm.
So for Lose, if you're not serializing it, do you still write it the same way? Like, do you still
I'll have maybe a clearer idea of where something might go because there's like a fixed page length, unlike most of my other comics where it could be like 8 or 100 pages. See what happens, but yeah, for Lose, I'll usually have like it won't be that plotted, but it'll be like I know this character has to reach or like this theme has to kind of conclude in some way, but I won't know how to get there necessarily.
Well, I noticed too, like the first issue is like comics interspersed with one kind of main story, and then each issue the main story keeps getting bigger and bigger. Yeah. And I know, I think, Annie, you guys changed the length a little bit over time.
Mm-hmm.
Is there? Do you think there'd ever be a story that's too big for Luz, or you'd have to serialize it through the issues? Or do you guys have a set idea, like the length of how big each book should be?
Hands off. That's one book I leave totally to Michael.
Yeah, like we now just, I think the only, it's like we have 48 pages as a minimum.
Yeah.
And I like the idea of not, of each one being self-contained still.
It has like a Harry Potter thing going now, like if you look at the bookshelf where they...
Yeah.
There's been one story I was like, there have been a few stories where I thought like, oh, this is going to be end up being bigger than Luz can fit. But then all of those stories I've abandoned anyway, because the Seed Stirs became that, like,
right.
Twice. And then, like, yeah, just there have been things like that, but I just end up not working on them instead. I think I'll turn them into a graphic novel and end up.
I remember you were doing the comic for Luz 5, and I remember you threw it out at my house.
Yep.
But it was color, and it was, I think you were already up 13 or 14 pages, and then it ended up being, like, that became the story that you guys, it's the last story in A Body Beneath. It's a four-page story with tons of panels.
Also called Muskoka.
hot Muskoka's hot right now.
Yeah,
it's really or like maybe a real trend for Muskoka.
Yeah.
I can imagine like the tourist industry would be like really pleased with like Jillian and Mariko's book. Because like it's depicted fairly nicely. Whereas in yours, like a person gets shot in the head and like buried in a grave.
Different childhoods.
Well, I wanted to talk to everybody here about. I was thinking about serialization and the like gripping need for validation that we all feel because of Twitter. So I wanted to talk a little bit about like Patrick, for all the work that you're doing so prolifically. How much of like the way you create it has to do with sharing it? Like online or in print, like can you talk a bit about the way that the work being seen and how it affects like how you do it?
I don't know. I think it is just like it's sort of just a need for validation, and like maybe that's why I find myself like refreshing Tumblr a lot and like and Twitter to see like how people are reacting to it. And that's kind of interesting because it does sort of like affect, like how you choose what work you're gonna put in your book. Like there was two stories I did for New Comics 3 that I didn't continue with because like they didn't get a great reaction on social media. Yeah, and like they also were just not very good. So like that's fair.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah.
But for like. For something like Distance Mover or Black Mass, do you find it easier to deal with longer narratives if you're thinking of them in small chunks rather than...
Yeah, I kind of like, I compose like even longer stories I compose in like 3-page like spurts. That's like a good pacing for like a sort of like setup and like punchline kind of thing.
And Jenny, I mean, your book, no one's really seen any of it. You had to work on it sort of not in secret, that sounds weird, but... You sit with the work for so long, but I know in addition to that, you also do your webcomic, so I wondered if those are sort of related.
Yeah, I mean, and now it's hard to just, like, wait for a book to come out, because we're just used to, like, instant gratification, where you finish a thing and, like, 5 minutes later, people are looking at it. I think it's nice to have a balance, and I actually wanted to ask Michael about that, because I feel like too much instant gratification is probably not good, like, for your psyche. So there is something nice about sort of compiling something and having... You're just sort of creating a different experience. So for your question to you, to, like, volley it back to you...
Yeah, do it.
Is that something that you consciously are thinking? Because you do work for print quite a bit, knowing that you're going to put out a book. But then you're constantly sort of serializing multiple web things... online too. Is that something that you're aware of and trying to balance, or is it just whatever medium fits the thing you're making?
I think of print in mind like as the final thing all the time.
Okay.
I like putting things online because I guess part of it's like I put things online because that's what I've been doing forever, and
right.
It's also like I used to, when I made a bunch of zines, I would just, like, throw them in coffee shops or, like, just give them away. And this is really, like, a cheaper, and I still need to make zines, but this is, like, a cheaper and more efficient way of doing that and getting work out there. And I sort of feel like I'm in a weird place where I couldn't stop because I've, like, any kind of audience I've built, I feel like a lot of
that
built
totally. That's
through,
how, like, you interact with the comic community now.
Yeah, and, like, just being on LiveJournal, like, way back, it's like I, like, my earliest people who were interested in my work were, like, people who I met on LiveJournal, and then it's kind of, like, a thing that I built up from there. So I feel like, well, I should post stuff online, but I always think of print as the final form.
It's just interesting, because I wonder how much, like, because the way that you even view comics online is so different in terms of just browser width and stuff. I wonder how that feeds back to, or if it does, to the way things basically look, you know what I mean? Or the font size to image ratio and stuff like that.
Yeah, like, I'm certainly aware, like, some of my things don't work as well. The Styx Angelica comic I'm doing, like, doesn't really work for Tumblr very well. But, like, I like putting it up, but it's, like, lengthwise in a way that, like, you have to shrink it, and when you scroll by, you have to, like, work to kind of read it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, doesn't do very well.
I found myself, like, making portrait-style images way more because they appear better on Tumblr.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, well, whenever anyone sends, like, if any of you guys send me, like, something to look at, I almost always, like, rotate. I rotate the images and then look at them in sideways on my computer. Because, like, they look really, like, the boards and just, like, random stuff, they look really whack on my little, like, laptop.
Oh, interesting.
It's like I wish I had a tablet just to, like...
So you're looking at the sideways when you're doing it.
Yeah. I turn it on the side and go, like...
Yeah, when I get an illustration done that's really long, and I'm like... Like, I actually like working in that form up. I'm like, that's not going to look good online. I actually weigh that now.
But, like, a spot in a magazine, you know, it can only be, like, an inch tall.
Yeah,
it's wide.
Yeah, it's actually really funny because you can have a really dramatic image, but it's so wide that it doesn't really translate to viewing online, which is, like, the most important place to view it now.
Yeah, that's crazy. I was going to ask, too, I was just thinking what you said about, like, using the small pieces to experiment for stuff. Do you guys all do that? I was wondering, like, Jillian, like, I know sometimes I see ideas that are in your mini comics, or in your, well, actually, first they're tweets, and then they're,
yes.
And then they're strips.
The evolution of ideas.
Yeah. But then, I guess, I guess that's another thing, do you use small comics?
I think so. I mean, I don't know how you can really compartmentalize too much anyway. I mean, I basically started making a webcomic because I want to get better at writing, you know what I mean? And it was just a very easy, like, low bar to start just doing these incremental things where I didn't care if they looked good. Like, it was sort of just, they were just kind of exercises. And that's why I ended up with such a dumb premise, because I was just like, it's just like sort of a backdrop for, like, this exercise. But then it does, as you get comfortable with that's your new way of doing things. So, I assume that you guys are kind of the same way. It's definitely not like I'm creating. It's different with the book graphic novels because I am working with another person, so that her thing influences my thing, but absolutely.
It's like keeping a journal or something. It's like short comics, yeah.
I like when a comic's really long and the first, like, 50 pages are, like, the first season of a show. Like, the first season of Buffy is, like, kind of shitty.
Everything's like, you know, like, they all, like, weird Mickey Mouse for, like, their eyes or not exactly.
We're just, like,
spot.
They don't know what each character, like, does.
Yeah.
Like, who is this? Like, what? Xander's, like, super annoying and that. Yeah.
Well, I tell my students, I teach at the School of Visual Arts in New York, and I say to them, it's, like, this is the best time to be comics person because it's just so cheap and easy to be producing this stuff and, like, gaining an audience, and it's just repetition, and then repetition you're going to improve, so I think it's, like, a great time to be starting out for that reason, these little micro publishing or whatever you want to call them.
Totally.
Platforms.
Andy, are you on Tumblr a lot looking for people? Is that
kind
of like
your
needs?
Yeah, I used to go to, you know, websites, remember those? And then go to links from people's sites, but now Tumblr's pretty much the place. Although it's way harder to find out who it is because, you know, it's a code. So yeah. The odd time I've given up because I can't find. I go through to your site and I still don't know who you are. I can't contact you. So
everyone here who has a Tumblr without their name on it is
yeah,
like,
I'll say it again and again because people have to work up to see it. And yeah. I'm guessing some of them want to stuff published by
that's
a publisher
so
and I can't find you. I don't know who Douchebag 69 is. I still don't know. So I can maybe tell you you're in Philadelphia or whatever. So. Yeah. Maybe put your name somewhere or some contact email. It's, you know, that's all I have to say.
And I guess as a publisher, too, like, it's interesting to watch people get better, right? Like, you have a feeling that someone could be an interesting project, and then you're, like, waiting for them to step.
Yeah, I spend my time, you know, being amazed by that, and then intrigued by some stuff, and then grumpy about all the people who are biting you guys. Yeah. Like more so.
Douchebag 69.
Maybe. But anyway, there's a lot of that.
I wanted to ask you guys also, it's kind of related, I suppose, but about collaboration. Just thinking of things that everyone here works on. It's an interesting thing, that especially I can start with you, Jillian, about your work with Mariko and sort of talking about, I was thinking about your personal work and your collaborative work and sort of the different emotional, like, things you get out of them. Because I know, because we're friends, that you are working on a personal story. A completely separate, like, comic. So,
information.
but it's
so totally different. I'm pretty confident that I wouldn't myself come up with a story like that, but I love the story she comes up with, and they're way more, they hit a totally different emotional place than, like, I could ever hit, and I learn a lot about writing from working with her scripts and stuff like that, and she gives me complete latitude to do what I want with her. I mean, they're basically kind of like theater scripts. There's just dialogue. So in that way, it's really, I always am a person that likes working with constraints, so that way it's like a totally encompassing constraint, and then I just sort of try to be guided with the content, and then I don't kind of worry too much about style, because style is your handwriting. Like, you can't help your style, so I don't try to worry about it. It's more just, like, how I interpret the information or the content that she gives me. So, it's a totally different story, but I think it's good in that her writing is so... Panels after this panel, actually.
Oh, yeah.
So, if you're interested.
No plugs.
But it's a much more sort of, like, emotional style of story, so
sure.
And I think I've learned a lot from, like, because I think that's significant to have some emotional resonance and not just from sort of style affectation exercise, which I think is really interesting about to go back to, like, the biting of Michael style. It's so funny because I don't really I know that you have a very strong, like, aesthetic style, but really I think the strength that you bring is the writing and the story and, like, the universe and stuff like that, which is a lot more difficult to create, but people just see this surface of, like, oh, that looks interesting and new, but they don't have the context for how you got there, and so it's just interesting that that's what people choose to sort of bite is not the to not recognize that it's actually the storytelling is what makes you very compelling.
That's
sorry,
nice of you.
No,
it could never be you.
Patrick, I was going to ask you about one of my favorite stuff that you guys do is probably the comics with Mickey Zekeli.
Oh, yeah.
For folks who haven't read it, there's basketball comic, butler comic,
yeah, there's
rain comic,
cop comic, basketball comic, Pixar's Cars comic, Rain comic, Butler comic, and then there's one more maybe?
Jumping comic?
No, that didn't come out yet.
Like two from now or something.
Christmas
comic. Christmas comic. Yeah. Christmas comic came out in, like, June.
how did those get started? And, like, do you guys talk at all about, is it just the prompt, or do you guys actually, like...
Yeah, it's just, we just come up with a name. We started at SBX, like, 2 years ago. We were all just drawing, like, we're like, let's draw comics about cops. We're, like, sitting in the bar. And then that was it. And we just kept going. Mickey just, like, will email us a title. And we're like, yeah, it's it. Let's do it.
I have like some of those drawings that Domitil did because she was at the bar too. She's yeah. like the secret fourth member.
Yeah. Yeah, we cut her.
And then you guys actually did a collaborative drawing book recently.
Yeah. Yeah, we like Michael and I have done like a lot of collaborative like posters for like our shows, or like we did a couple of book launches. I just send Michael like a page of drawings and then he turns it into something. I feel like they're like Michael just does all the real work.
I feel like I'm doing a collage out of a bunch of Patrick Kyle drawings. Like I feel like you're very trusting.
Yeah,
like, I wasn't sure if you liked the book until like because you were like, no, oh, this like is cool, it. And then like a few weeks later, I was like, no, I'm actually into this.
Like, oh. Just because, like I didn't really have anything to do with like the final composition, so I feel like it does feel kind of removed. But then like I recognize what I made in it.
Do you guys ever draw like physically together, or is it all like digital collaboration?
No, we just use computers.
You're in the same room. So this is the first time you guys have been in the same
yeah,
room.
Yeah, yeah. I've never met Michael. Yeah.
That's how we do band practice.
We have band practice via yeah. Skype, but like without the video.
Ryan, can I ask you a question about collaborations?
Yeah, okay. Yes. You can.
I don't have to.
No.
I feel like you mentioned like the Lady Gaga zine, and then you guys did Thickness. Which I feel like kind of touched off like this like wave of sort of fanzine like anthology things. Okay. Is that fair to say? Or
I think we were just a part of it.
Okay.
Yeah. But I don't think we.
Yeah.
I don't think it was like such an influential zine.
Right.
It's like, oh, I want to do my like.
I think Thickness was pretty influential.
Yeah, I think so too.
Yeah.
I think of Thickness as a separate sort of thing than a fanzine though, because it was more like.
No, totally. I think. I think I just mean the idea of anthologies. So, why do you think that is such a popular thing that's happening now?
There have been a lot of anthologies lately, and I think specifically there have been like a lot that like look good, like mm-hmm. actually look good. Because mm-hmm. I mean, I grew up reading a lot of anthologies, and I think like they serve a bunch of purposes all at once that are fairly obvious separately, but they sort of conspire to make them really compelling for people. And like the main one is it's a really low bar to do one page mm-hmm. and actually have it in print. If you do just one page and then you throw it online, that's something, but to actually have it be part of a book that will add up to something mm-hmm. is really nice. And then the other, it's just like a community thing. I think like there are some anthologies that the editor has a very strong opinion about what it should be, and they gather people around that idea. Mm-hmm. That's why you see a lot of like ones that are fanzines of like Game of Thrones or Pokemon or whatever it might be. The idea of the property is very compelling, or the editor is like really pushy. That's usually like that's how my tact is
right.
Be really pushy. But the other kind of anthology that I like is just people who are like all in one area or one school or something like that. And it's sort of like really it's just like cementing your friendships.
Yeah. I think we talked, I'm just like thinking back actually to a panel we did at Mocha where we were sort of talking about like online communities that you want to like take your friendship beyond just like Twitter at replies, you know what I mean? And kind of make a thing together, which is like what friends do, you know? So.
Yeah, I mean like that's how we became friends. Like just like making this, we were friends online for a while, but like, and it's, there's no like arguments or anything like that, but you just really have to make decisions together and like trust the other person. So like by definition, you become like closer through it. So
right.
I think there's a lot of anthologies where you hope that it'll add up to something bigger than the individual pages, and it like doesn't. You know, like an anthology or a scene that like doesn't have anything really to say.
Yeah.
So I mean, there's a lot of ones that are strictly visual. I've done ones that are strictly visual, but I really like when an anthology has like a letter from the editor at least. Or like essays or something to sort of like convey more. There's a lot of things now that it's so easy to put out a book, to print an actual nice looking book.
Right.
It's so easy to make something, especially like, from online sources from all over the world. So there isn't like some sort of narrative or like tonal or like letter from the editor, then like what's the barrier so low? Why would you even do it?
It's just a collection of images.
Well, I think it's like the standout anthologies from the past while like things like Weird or Mold Map or Kramer's or like books that at least have a very distinct vision. Even if some of them maybe like they have the same hit to miss ratio that you feel from some book, it's like well they're coming from a really clear perspective or a clear scene or something.
I mean the main good thing about the fact that like so many anthologies are coming out lately is just like the diversity of voices.
Agreed.
Especially like editors. Like there's just like a lot of just like queer zines, female edited zines, just like zines from parts of the country that parts of the continent that you wouldn't normally see. So I think that's the thing that's super nice about cheap printing is just how a lot of my favorite zines growing up were often like some white dude put it together, and that's not because I like love stuff by white dudes primarily or exclusively or anything like that, but they're just the only ones who like have, you know, there's a lot of those are the popular zines that were available, and now it feels a lot more democratic. And that's awesome.
Mm-hmm. That's a good
point. So I was thinking about your collaborations, and you haven't done a ton of them, I thought at first, but then I started thinking about it more, and I realized like you have been doing more lately than before.
Yeah, well, and I don't do a lot of comics collaborations, but I guess our work together as editors, and then on another thing.
I was going to ask
two comics collaborations, I guess.
Oh, okay.
I think two.
Yeah,
because I did one with Ben Mara and one with Leslie Stein.
And I know with Leslie, you drew a comic that she wrote, and then you wrote a comic that she drew.
Yeah.
Which one is easier to, like, which part was easier to let go of, the writing or the drawing?
The writing is just easy. It's like, you deal with this. Like, I feel like writing a comic, like, the way, like, writing a comic's really difficult, but the way I write a comic is, like, really stupid and easy. It's just, like some trail of thought thing. With like no structure or plan, and then like I felt like just giving her these notes because I don't write like normally I thumbnail my own scripts out and like I'll do the dialogue later, but giving it to someone else was just like I don't know what I'd do with just a bunch of like loose bits of dialogue. Like you manage this, and she did, and it felt really like, oh cool, yeah.
I had a question here that said we're working together on a project, like a cartoon project thingy. And I wrote, can you talk to me in front of everyone about what it's like working together? Is it horrible?
I always feel bad because you're like an organized person, and I'm sort of always like, I feel like if I look through all my emails to you, most of them would have either the line like, sorry about the lack of correspondence, and then like, oh, I'm a mess today. You know, like, I just feel like you get all my panicked emails, and it must be kind of like wearing to have someone in your life who's just like, oh, I haven't slept in a while. I don't know if this is making any sense.
Well, I looked at our old emails recently. Like, I had an idea online that it'd be funny to make a little gift scene that was my first interaction with all of my cartoonist friends. And it's almost always like, oh, I really like you. And it's just really awkward. But I was looking at, I looked at our third email was me, like, asking you to, like, turn in something. And the point of that story is not that you hadn't turned it in, but that I was hounding you and asking you to do stuff from the very beginning. I was just like, this is like the story. That was like the story of our friendship is me like bugging you and making you like not sleep and stuff.
I'm not sleeping anyway.
Okay, let's.
But, I also do that.
I just do it later at night than you do, Ron.
Have you ever had that happen where you like are hanging out with someone and they're like, oh, I'll pull up the email, and you look at the inbox and it's all emails from you?
Oh, yeah.
I feel like a tyrant or something. Like, I look, like, here, I'll pull up the email. It's like, Ryan. What the hell? But it's been weird, huh, to actually, like, make something together.
Yeah, well, this is a more involved than... I felt like Thickness was pretty involved. Like, Lady Gaga was just sort of like, oh, a bunch of people are doing this. But the Thickness thing, I feel like that was the product of a lot of conversations. And, like, and this is just more conversations, I guess. Yeah, like, just more decisions to be made.
I was telling somebody, I said, like, whenever we've disagreed about something or, like, wanted to do one thing or the other, like, you really choose your battles. I think, like, I do that too, but I was thinking there's some stuff you're like, there's some stuff you don't care about, and the stuff you care about is, like, very thoughtful and very compelling. Okay. So we'll talk about something, you're like, yeah, that's fine. Just lay it out, however, whatever. And then, like, certain very specific aesthetic things, or, like, emotional things, there'll be, like, we'll have, like, a 6 or 10 page, like, email interaction.
Oh, okay, sure.
The cover, doing the animated cover to Thickness 2 is the one I'm still sore about.
Yeah, I kiboshed the lenticular cover for Thickness 2, because I was like, it's going to be a lot of work.
I remember you were like, it looks like really 90s, and I'm like, yeah. And you're like, it's like a Shadowhawk or, like, Wildcats too. I'm like, exactly. And then you were like, and then you said, this is too much inside baseball. Okay, then you said, it's really cool as like an idea, like or it's pretty or whatever, but it doesn't make sense for an erotic comics anthology. Like, it doesn't. What does it have to do with the anthology? And I wanted to win the argument, so I went and found like 1950s lenticular pinups. Because I knew they existed, so I found like 100 scans of them, and I was like, look, it's part of the history of erotic material. I think you were right, actually.
I felt bad about that, though, because I feel like there's a case of a lot of things where I'm like the weird, unambitious buzzkill. I'm like, well...
No one would ever use the word unambitious to describe. I guess I want to talk a little bit, since we were talking about working in cartoons. I know, Jillian, you did an episode of Adventure Time, and you're working on your second one right now.
I just finished it.
Your first one is great. I haven't seen the second one yet. The first one's beautiful.
Thank you.
And Michael, I think a lot of people don't realize it, but that's half of all your time, right?
It's my day job, I guess. Yeah. That's how we call it.
So I was just curious, like, how is it for both of you guys? How has it changed sort of your storytelling or your drawing style? Has it affected either your writing or your drawing heavily?
Well, for me, I haven't storyboarded enough for it to affect my writing. We had a few conversations about this. I feel like storyboarding versus drawing a comic, for me at least, was like two totally different things. It would be like the difference between like working on a sculpture and drawing a comic. Because everything had to be timed so well. And plus, I'm a very meandering writer, and like I like just having a lot of conversations. And I improvise things. And,
right. You said it was sort of like drawing a diagram or something. Like everything's like beat to beat.
Yeah, or there's a degree where at some point it felt like I was putting things in a puzzle. Because it's like, well, if this happens in Act 1, then I put this in Act 3. Which is sort of cool and challenging, but it felt really separate from how I write anything else. But it's changed the way I draw because I work in design. And I both had to, like, not take shortcuts anymore. So it's like, if I had to draw a car engine, like, if I had a comic where I wrote a car engine and I got to it, I'd be like, well, there's no longer this car engine. Someone's hand is going to be right there. But here, I have to learn how to draw more things, I guess. I learned really early on in the show, when Andy Rusino was still the head designer, I drew a truck, which is like, I just hate drawing vehicles in the show. And I drew a truck, and then he's like, you know, like, the way perspective works is that, like, trucks don't get bigger. But it's made me a more, I think, like, I have to do it so quickly, and working with Andy, and now I currently work with Matt Forsyth, I have to be a much more minimal and elegant cartoonist, and learning from their notes is very helpful.
Yeah, I know our friend Calvin Wong works on a regular show, and he said, like, it's just, like, boot camp, like, doing storyboarding week after week. Like, you just learn how to cartoon and, like, simplification, like, so quickly.
If you want to, like, get really good at drawing, or just to, if you want to understand yourself,
I got really big.
I know it's really weird to say that, but, like, just try to storyboard one of those things, because, like, you are just, it is like a boot camp where you're just going... It's drawing exercises for, like, weeks and weeks and weeks. But I think the main difference between the storyboarding and the cartooning is they deal with time really differently. Like, with cartooning, it's like you're kind of filling in the gaps between the panels. You're like, so if he's, like, somebody's in the shadow of one panel, the next he's in the car, then, like, you kind of make that difference. You know, you kind of fill in the gap between that. But, like, maybe it's just their style, too. They always want everything hooked up. They always want everything sort of like, if the arm's up in one, it needs to be arm up in the next one, and then he puts his arm down. It's never just like, you can't just fill in the gap of just, if his arm's down, then you put it down. You know what I mean? Like, they really need...
The laws of gravity and physics and natural, like...
Yeah, they really want it all sort of like, you have to be a lot more careful with, like, time and continuity, which you don't need to do. Yeah. Well, I know that's personally their style, they want it to be like that, but that was, like, something that was majorly...
Well, yeah, and, like, I like that in comics you can afford a really, like... I feel like it's, like, a cubist version of time or something, because, like, you can just slow down moments or bounce around and things.
And, decompressing and compressing time, and then with the Adventure Time, it's totally different. Yeah. That was, I think, the main difference.
We have about 15 minutes left, so I want to let people ask questions, but... before we do that, Annie, I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about the new book and any other projects you guys. I know Lou's Six coming.
Lou's Six is coming in the fall. Michael can tell you more about the book, but yeah, this one.
You can probably speak about it more. No.
Well, no, the thing you need to know is it was right down to the wire because this time you got 14 pages in, 13 pages in twice.
Yeah.
And threw it out.
I got it was a rough one.
So I have printing schedules to meet, so there's a little, I have more gray hair than I had before. But yeah.
I'm sorry.
Well, then he did it, like, so, what time span? After
the
threw
final
it out
version,
twice?
I did it all in a month.
Because
I did it. But it was the one worst. Like, I hadn't drawn that fast before, so I'm going to try to avoid. I was doing 2 pages a day, which is faster than I've worked in the past.
And it's really good.
I hope so.
What do you do with all the pages
good.
Don't use?
Yeah.
Oh, they're just gone.
You delete them completely?
Yeah.
You don't
have like Ryan thought he was saving more, but
yeah.
That's
like, I got a Chrome like add-on where you click a button and it saves every image.
Yeah.
But I shouldn't say. You used to put them in a secret folder.
Yeah.
And you stopped doing that after I told you I was saving them.
I stopped doing the secret folder because I stopped showing people it in progress as much.
Okay.
I don't really know why.
I
just stopped.
It was probably
yeah, it was just you. Yeah. You're the reason. Yeah, for some reason, I just like the idea, like, if I'm putting... But, I mean, this might change, too, because I'm now serializing, I guess, what will be a story in Lou 7 online. But mm-hmm. I thought, like, well, if I'm, like, putting Leather Spaceman and Styx Angelica and all these other things online on like a weekly or monthly basis, then like maybe I should let Lou's incubate just
be
with myself until it's done, and then I'm like, surprise, it's this.
Yeah. I mean,
sorry.
But are you less likely to throw that out then if you do that?
The online thing?
Yeah.
I think so. And I'm thinking about it differently. If I... I feel like Ant Colony and Styx Angelica and Kid Mafia and all these other things benefit because I have time between issues where I'm like, I only think of Kid Mafia when it's time to draw another issue.
Right.
But then, I don't know, like it lets me sit with things more and incubate
sure.
more. So I feel like, I don't know if it will, this is sort of the experiment, I don't know if Luz is going to benefit from that or not.
I'll wait until page 14.
That's the number.
Or when you come over to my house.
Yeah.
If anyone has any questions, I think just raise your hand and call in folks, and then I'll repeat the question with the microphone. Is that right?
Yeah.
Cool.
You don't have to repeat it. Everyone
won't repeat
please.
It.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
You discussed the topic of validation earlier. But I feel like this feeling of validation is a very modern one. I don't think it really necessarily existed in the art world 100, 200 years ago. Why do you think we feel the need to be liked by other people in our community? And can you expand on that idea of validation and why it's important? And it's a confusing emotion for myself, and I'm sure you guys have thought about it.
It's probably not important. It's just like, it's... I guess like it's there.
Yeah, I was going to say it's available.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I sort of think, sometimes I think of it like an extension of like art school, because like we had crits in art school or whatever, and like that would be the day where you go and your teacher would be like, good job or whatever, and then now I can have that every day. It's great. Getting graded. It might be that, just like the need to be graded or something, like see how well
like,
you're doing.
It's weirdly, it's fake, but it's weirdly quantifiable.
Yeah, yeah.
Like,
it's
I've
not like a dollar.
Twitter jokes that didn't get. I was like,
yeah, me too.
Yeah. Really the ones where like, oh, the right people didn't favor that.
Yeah, no. Basically, like, if
that person's not funny.
If you don't favorite something, like, I feel like I kind of missed a mark.
Yeah.
What?
But it's numeric, though. You're like.
Crazy.
I'm just trying to make that. No, but like it's that thing. Like, yeah, you're like 86 notes.
Yeah.
It's like a number of check marks. Like literally, you're literally getting gold stars.
Yeah.
Like four things.
Yeah.
Do you think it comes down to money? In the end, it's like, well, if I'm being validated, I have a better chance of starting a career in the field that I've chosen to practice. Hmm. Or do you think it more so has to do with I am making more people on this planet happy by getting those are working up there.
It's something weirder, right?
Yeah, I don't know if, in my experience, that stuff has not translated very well into money.
Yeah, it doesn't really. It feels, it's good. It's like just so people are aware that you're still working, and I think that's really important. That like it's good to show people that you're busy.
I think all that stuff is just promo, and like promo is important, but it's not the be all end all. I worry about how the content is being shaped by faves and likes, because it's a certain type of thing that gets a fave and a like. And, you know, we're just sort of talking about what kind of work exhibits well on these platforms.
Kickstarter's part of that too, right? Like, like this got made because people wanted it, which, like, fundamentally is important, but I think I find it refreshing when you see an anthology that, like, nobody wanted.
Right.
and it surprises you with really solid work, but, like, no one was liking. That's always shocking. You're like, oh, this isn't someone that everyone already agreed is great or good or whatever.
Right. Or like sound biteable or retweetable, you know? There's not a problem with that either, but I just think that it's no big tragedy, I guess, that somebody has to have some conviction and be okay with not getting a lot of faves to want to do something.
Yeah.
It's pretty instant too. So I think there's slow burn stuff. If you were really behind what you're doing, but you know, not lots of people, you know, liked it, but you really felt strongly about it, you shouldn't stop.
Yeah,
and be shaped by, you know, people you don't fake friends.
Yeah, Patrick.
You know?
Yeah, I feel like when there's like more of something, that's a good way to like create like value to it. Like I do like a webcomic called Special Friend, and it's just like really stupid jokes and like really bad drawings, and I was like, the first one I posted, like no one noticed it, and I'm like, as long as I keep making it, people will be interested in this. And I just made like the 100th one, and now it's like a thing. And like, it's like, you can sort of like stick to your conviction and not just like want to draw like a slice of pizza, like smoking a joint, and like to get notes or whatever.
And I think that's like an artist thing too, is like you have to have some type of self assurance, like, well, I'm right about this thing, and like everyone else is gonna come around. Or for like jokes or something, I feel like that's an important thing. Like if a joke a bunch of people don't think it's funny, like I can hate a lot of my art, but I'm like, I know I'm funny, like fuck this.
You have to sort of like acclimatize people to your style of humor. And like you can do that over like a period of time.
There's definitely something to be said for like this guy that I know, I'm friends with, said the most important thing about a zine is putting out the second issue. Just like that thing where, like, when you look at something like Giant Robot or any sort of like serialized magazine that was important to you, it almost always like existed for a while, and you got to like have that emotional connection. Mm-hmm. Oh, yes.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I watched a lot growing up, and it just became something that I've, like, that, yeah, that type, I don't know if it's, like, a parody or something, what I do, but, like, I'll adopt that style of narration for a few comics, and I do like having, generally, I feel like I do a lot of comics where, yeah, it's just images with some sort of text above, and when I do that, I try to make sure that there's, Or what's appealing to me about it is that you can have some dissonance between what the text says and what the image is, and that's like a nice thing about comics, maybe.
That just blew my mind. That was really astute. I was like, I was like, whoa, that's it.
Yeah.
That was really good. Yeah, and also like I think you have some comics that are sort of like Wikipedia pages, and it has that same underlying thing where you wonder like, wait. You're like, oh, cool, okay, yeah. And then you're like, wait a minute, that cannot be true. Like, I'm thinking of Spotting Deer, especially.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
But even for things like for College Girl by Night, that was a big part of it. The thickness comic I did was like eventually finding out that like, oh, the story being narrated is different from the story being depicted right now. But like not being immediately clear, I guess.
Yeah, and you did the sequel to that comic, which will be in the Thickness Anthology. And I found that really interesting because it was the same story generally, but from a different character who has less understanding about what's happening, but then you actually learn more about what's really physically happening to the bodies and things. That's cool. That was a good question. Does anyone else have any other questions? Oh, yeah.
I was just curious why Lewis 1 wasn't in the collection.
Oh, yeah.
Well, the elephant in the room.
I just don't like that comic very much anymore. And it's not like, people have sort of been like, well, you know, are you like pulping copies or like, and it's or like, you're, and it's just, there's work I drew in high school that I'm not keeping in print anymore. And like, yeah, I don't know. I just feel like Lose One, it feels disconnected enough from the other story. Like, I also thought like, there's a degree to which that whole anthology reads, parts of it might be kind of choppy because it's like, oh, I drew each of these a year apart and like, they're not as unified necessarily as other short story collections might be. And Lose One included with them would seem like something that a totally different person drew, maybe next to everything else. I wanted it to still be like a cohesive book that you could read in a sitting and not feel, yeah.
I thought sort of like, I was one of those people who wanted it in, like I wish it was. But then I was thinking there's probably like 40 comics before Lose Two that you would hate to have in there as well.
Yeah,
it just so happens that one was part of the series.
Yes.
In name, but probably like...
There is a zine called Lose that I think you have a copy of, like yes. A 16-pager. And like, yeah, that's gone forever.
I should have sent it to Anne.
I think Anne, that I probably gave one, like, yep. The first time I met you.
I think I have that.
Yeah. Sorry, in the back.
You're all friends with strong aesthetic tastes and opinions. You all show... To what extent are you having other sets of eyes on work that's in progress? Like, would you send things to a friend for editorial feedback or an opinion often? Like, say, an issue of Lose of a new comics in progress?
My girlfriend Jeanette is like...
Did
everyone hear that? More or less?
Right, yeah,
my girlfriend Jeanette is an illustrator who I went to school with, and like, I can't finish something without being like, hey, Jeanette, come here, look at this thing. And then she's just like, yeah, whatever, and then walks away. But that's like, oh, I get that validation. I'm like, okay, good. It's ready.
Yeah, I guess, I mean, yeah, for there's a lot of stuff I serialized. I mean, recently with the last Lose issue, I'll send you an email being like, hey, like, did I dream this? is this like a thing?
Yeah, it's very rarely like, I want feedback on this or like, tell me what you think. It's more just like, like it being real, I guess.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I finished this, it's done. It's interesting with friends who are creators. They show you stuff sometimes just to show you, and other times they show you stuff because they want your opinion. Mm-hmm. And you have to, yeah, the former is more common than the latter. And then you sent me a comic you were working on.
Yeah, I actually don't. My husband is an illustrator as well. I never show him anything. It's just like he's just into a different thing. You know, like both work I make, I don't really make for somebody like him. You know, so I don't really show him things, but I show you things. You're pretty much the only person I show stuff to.
The last thing you sent me, you were like, oh yeah, blah, blah, blah. And I said, do you want me to respond to this and be like, oh, this is awesome? Or, like, just tell you that I like it? Or, like, do you actually want, like, suggestions? And you're like, no, suggestions.
Oh, no, because there's no point in showing somebody, for me, like, because I want to get your feedback. But I think the thing with that is, like, you just need a certain limited amount of people that you're going to show stuff. I don't think you can show stuff to everybody and get, like, everybody's feedback. I think you just need, like, a... trust, like, one or two trusted people.
Yeah.
Because they can just spiral, you know?
Yeah, that was the question, too, is about having outside eyes, I suppose. I guess that's what posting it online is.
Well, I always like suggestions or feedback, but I think more often than not, I ignore them. Or sometimes I'll even be like, they're right, but...
Sometimes you just... It's like, that's sort of the thing with, like, I think when you get to, like, higher level art school, it's like, I just want to show you this thing, and get your impression of what you're seeing, and if you're seeing what I'm seeing, and if I'm communicating the thing I'm trying to communicate. You know what I mean? It's just like basically trying to hear your response to it is the most useful type of...
Not so much like change this or don't do that,
like,
but
if it's glaring,
it's making me feel something. Oh, good.
Right. Am I feeling the thing that... Or are you feeling the thing that I'm trying to communicate, you know, is, I think, the biggest challenge.
Should we wrap it up?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. So thank you, everybody, for coming. Thank you, Jillian, Annie, Patrick, Michael.